Thank you. Well, thank you very much, Matt and Renee, for the invite. It's quite a pleasure to be here. Right, there's a lot of words in the title, and I'll try and cover most of them today. I'm going to pretty much motivate my talk a little bit from the equity market point of view, and then I'll move on to the work we're doing. There's pretty much ongoing research. It's quite advanced, and I have some tables to show you that they're incomplete, but most of the stuff is already in there. So, you know, perhaps the thing that we really want to look at here is what happens to commodity markets. And whenever I say that, I'll be talking about electricity and gas mostly under the pricing measure. You know, we think it's quite clear by now that there's some stylized facts as to what happens under the physical measure. You normally have a seasonal trend, and then you can have spikes and jumps and mean reversion, and all of that is very clear. What is not clear to us, at least, is we think there's more, you know, work to be done in that area, is what happens under the pricing measure. You know, what are the key things that drive, you know, the dynamics under the Q measure? And so some of the things we set out to do in the paper, which is not in the public domain yet, is, you know, how do agents risk adjust the process to do pricing? So normally you try and write a model under P and go to Q and all this stuff, but really I think understanding what is actually being priced let's say a risk averse agent is an important question, and that's pretty much the main part of the talk. So one of the things we end up showing is that, and I'll motivate that intuitively, is that we think that under the risk neutral measure, under the measure Q, mean reversion has to be different. And I'll give some explanation. I'm very happy for people to disagree or agree or give me comments on that. Then that will allow us to understand a little bit more the connection between the spot market and the forward market, because it's something, if you start looking at data, they seem kind of disconnected in the long term and in the short term too, because of, you know, one tries to capture strong mean reversion in the spot market, and that translates into very sort of odd behavior when you come to pricing using the same sort of mean reversion speed. You know, also we can talk about stochastic risk premium. I'm not going to say much about that today because I don't have time. And also you can interpret most of our results in terms of, you know, the balance between, you know, retailers and producers and their hedging pressure between these. So, you know, so let me give you some intuition from the equity market, and this is how we want to think about the problem. If you really start thinking about, you know, when you do pricing of an option or look at the risk neutral measure in equity markets, that is very well studied and very well understood in some models. Of course, in the end you end up writing a model, but first of all you need to ask yourself, what do agents like or dislike, right? So if you, for example, think that what you want to do is minimize the volatility of your profits or of your investment, you know, you want to put in your portfolio perhaps assets that correlate negatively to what you already have, right? So for example, if the covariance, so this is only in equity, I'm not talking about the energy commodities yet, but if in equity, if I look at the covariance between my own consumption or profits and a risky asset, and I assume it's positive, normally, when you price that risky asset, you know, you can think of it as the expected value of the payoff minus a covariance correction. Like the fact that they covary positively means that you're not too keen on holding that asset anymore, right? Because you want to hold in your portfolio stuff that covaries negatively and goes in the opposite direction. When you're doing well, having another asset that does well, that means that covaries positively, might not be as interesting as having one asset where, you know, that goes in the opposite direction that might give you some sort of insurance. Therefore, here you would expect a covariance correction, and now you can see this from sort of a stochastic discount factor approach or kernel pricing or equilibrium pricing. It's pretty much is the same story. So one of the things you see is that in equity markets, agents tend to tone down when they think of good events and exaggerate the bad events. So normally, if you look at most of the papers that calibrate, you know, equity returns to option markets under the Q measure, what you normally observe is that the right tail, so when those assets do very well under the Q measure, you know, you get take away a little bit of weight from the right tail and move it to the left tail. So in another way of saying this is that, you know, you tone down the good events, the ones you like, and that you exaggerate a little bit the bad events. And normally that's why you see the implied vols, you know, highly skewed to the left, because risk neutral, you know, agents in the risk neutral measure tend to exaggerate the probability of price drops, let's say. And for example, in Hilliard's paper, the CGMY paper, you see that exactly, that under the risk neutral, in the risk neutral measure, the decay of the left tail is you know, under the risk neutral measure, is not as strong as the decay under the P measure, and the right tail under the Q measure decays much quicker than under the fiscal measure, pretty much telling you that what you do is you tone down the good events and exaggerate the price drop. So pretty much, you know, the question is what happens in commodities, right? You know, this is pretty much, you know, our starting point to motivate what we want to do. So what I want to talk about now is in commodities, what do I expect to happen, right? It's all intuitive. In the end, I'm going to write a model and show you what the data are telling me. So it's kind of tricky to think about what are the dislikes and the likes in energy commodities. I'll motivate those, give you an example with the Schwarz model, which is a very simple one and well understood. Then we propose an arithmetic model, and then we calibrate, you know, all of these under P and under Q, and you'll see, you know, the results we get, and I'll try and interpret some of the stuff that we found. So here again, now I'm going to talk about, imagine gas or electricity, retailers and producers, and the question is, you know, this curve variation between your profits and your exposure to a fuel, let's say, is something that, depending on which side of the market you are in, you know, you might like or you might dislike. So for example, if you're a retailer, you really hate to see jumps or spikes, right? That's presumably the thing that you're worried about the most, and you want to avoid them at all costs. You also hate to see jump persistence, and this is very important, right? To me, you know, being afraid of seeing spikes when you're a retailer is one thing, but also seeing spikes that, you know, stay up there for a day or two or three, it's something very dangerous, right? If you're exposed to the spot market and you see a big price hike and the mean reversion is not as high as you want, that's something you would fear. So I would see jump persistence as something I would like to avoid or a dislike as a retailer. Things that I would like to see if I'm exposed to the spot market as a retailer is, well, spikes, you know, when there's drops. I might, you know, want to see, in this case, low mean reversion to the seasonal trend. It should be slow here. However, the flip side of this is if you're a producer, you know, you're pretty much on the other side of the coin, right? You might, you know, love these and hate those. So the question is, you know, there will be a balance between the two, and it's very difficult for me to tell you which one will sort of overpower which. But in this particular example of the retailers, if I take as a base intuition I see in the equity markets or in stochastic discount factor pricing sort of framework, you know, you might expect that as a retailer, when you do pricing of forwards or when you go and engage into forward contracts or you cover yourself or try and insure yourself, when you do your pricing or agree to a price, you might be willing to exaggerate a little bit the frequency of the arrival of jumps, okay? You know, if that's what you hate the most, you exaggerate. So you say, well, I might be observing 10 spikes a year, but when I pay for a forward, I might be willing to accept that I'm assuming that I see 20 spikes a year. I might also exaggerate a little bit the average size of the jumps, and I might also underestimate the speed of mean reversion. Okay? By doing that, it's like doing something to the variance of the process. If I know that a jump takes 2-3 days to mean revert, but I assume that, you know, instead of 3-4 days, I assume it's 20 days. That means that I am really pretty much stretching the variance of the process to, you know, over-insure myself. That's pretty much what you end up doing. So let me give you an example. How do I manage, you know, one of those points, the mean reversion one? If I take a Schwarz model, the sort of very simple one, which is a one-factor model, I say, okay, a given commodity is the e to the power of this OU process, which I write down here under the fiscal measure. So you would assume that it's a very standard mean reversion process. That's a Brownian motion. So normally what do people have done in the literature, or most of the literature I read, they say, okay, how about if I just introduce a linear shift in here, or just stick in a market price of risk, or you can, you know, do an Escher transform, and we'll give you exactly this, and that is what you use for your pricing measure, right? And that is okay, but the problem with this, to me, you know, to us, is that you're only shifting the distribution of the process to the left or to the right, depending what happens here. What you can do, and we're not the first ones to propose this, you can see this in the sort of interest rate literature, and also there's comments in the paper by Schwartz and Smith later on, a couple of years after the publication of that one, is to say, how about if I have a state-dependent sort of market price of risk? So you not only include the market price of risk in here, but you also make it state-dependent. So you can see this whole factor as being the adjustment for risk. And what is interesting about that is that you end up changing the speed of mean reversion. So again, this is not yet what we, you know, our contribution that's already been done and discussed. And what is interesting about this is that you can have two cases, right? If beta is very, very small, okay, if beta goes to zero, you're back to the original sort of including just a linear shift as a risk adjustment. So it's the case I discussed above. But the interesting one is that if beta goes to one, then you end up with a pure Brownian motion, arithmetic Brownian motion. And this is interesting. Why? Because I say that under P, I have a mean reverting process, right? Shocks deviate, should bring you, to take you away from the seasonal component. They come down, in 3 days, 10 days, whatever days it might be. But under the pricing measure, you see kind of something close to a Brownian motion, right? You know, if it's one, you exactly can move to a Brownian motion setting. So what is this pretty much in terms of the distribution of prices? Let's say my original distribution for certain time t in the future, I stand today and say, well, what is the distribution of the returns in 2 months' time? This black line, a linear correction, most of the time you tend to think that you shift the distribution to the left. Okay, you don't do much there. The one where you alter the speed of mean reversion, right, where the agent says, okay, I hate to see deviations from the seasonal trend, so I'm going to exaggerate how long it takes now to come back to the seasonal component or where I should be. It's pretty much the red one here. You also you shift, to the left or to the right, and in this case we have it to the left, but you also, since they take longer to, shocks take longer to mean revert, you pretty much widen up the distribution. So what do we propose to do? In the end, we calibrate various models, but, we think a good way of moving forward is to say, how about if we just take an arithmetic model? By that, I mean I have the spot price instead of the log of the spot prices are a seasonal component, and n sort of shocks, and all of these could be, driven by levy processes. In the end, here I give you a particular example. So why do I think this is a good model? For many reasons. First of all, prices in gas and electricity can become negative. You can see them. It's not too often, but you can see them. So you don't need to put yourself, wear a straight jacket when you come to modeling, because you know prices do become negative. So that is not, from a financial point of view, a bad model. What is good about it is that, pricing forwards with a delivery period becomes much, much more easier than with an exponential model. And it's easier to pretty much, target what we want here, which is, why don't we think about what do risk-neutral agents do, right, to the mean reversion of the process, to the jump of the process, all of these under Q, right? So the examples I'll be looking at where I do calibration, I'm going to assume that spots are a seasonal component, and three, let's say three processes here. Two jumps, one that jumps up on mean reverts, and one an OU process, right? So whenever I talk about the jumpers, or I call them OU type processes because they're driven by jumps, and I'm going to assume they're exponentially distributed jumps and arrive in a Poisson manner, and the third one will be one Brownian motion. So I'm just going to write it here. So I'm going to have the seasonal component, then an OU And I know you type it jumps up. And I know you type. Okay, so imagine a compound Poisson process which jumps up, exponentially distributed, and the same one but jumps down. Okay? And this is pretty much, you know, all the technical proofs will be, you know, in the paper. Hopefully we'll see the light of day in a couple of months' time. So how do I really capture what I want? You know, I don't want to just have a model on the risk neutral measure that is a shift to the left or to the right, and the market would tell me what happens. I want a change of measure that would allow me also to change the mean reversion of the process, right? So if this Levy process has a Levy measure L, what we propose as a compensating measure is this one with this peculiar form, which is inspired in what I showed you before for the exponential model. And let me talk to you a little bit about it before I carry on. So as a particular case, if our beta goes to zero, this is pretty much like performing an Escher transform to the process. So I can recover, as a particular case, having, you know, doing an Escher transform to the process. So under the risk neutral measure, all I would be saying is I'm shifting the process to the left or to the right, depending. But however, you know, my beta will be between 0 and 1, and what I get is something similar to what I get, what I showed you before. I can see this as a market price of risk, and the speed of mean reversion will get adjusted. This will be the original speed under the measure P, and under the risk neutral measure, beta is between 0 and 1, I am going to be altering the speed of mean reversion under the Q measure. And that is something I want the market to tell me, the market data to tell me that is the case. The other thing which is interesting, if you start thinking about it, you know, let's just think about jumps up, is you get some jump clustering under the Q measure too, right? We don't get it under the physical measure because, you know, I'm assuming a Levy process which is independent increments and so on. But what I obtain here, the new process I obtain, is no longer a Levy process, right? And it's not of independent increments or anything as simple as that. I have, you know, the arrival of jumps will be state dependent. The interesting bit will be that if I saw a jump up, if X jumped up, the probability of observing a jump the next time interval will be even higher. So I get I get jump clustering under the Q measure, which is something that, you know, if you really think about it, it would be lovely to have under the P measure, because you normally observe that when something goes wrong in the market, it takes a few days to come back to normal, right? So that's why the mean reversion is very important. But it's also true that you can observe consecutive jumps in, you know, day after day. You might see something goes wrong, a plant comes down, or there's something happened to some storage facility in the UK, like it happened in the past. So you can get that day after day, you get hit by jumps and jumps and jumps. And when you look at the data, you in fact, you know, like you see volatility clustering in equity markets, you can see jump clustering, which in fact we would get with this change of measure under Q. Okay. So the OU process I'll be assuming here is very simple, right? And I do exactly the same thing. You know, my notation here is a little bit sloppy, but my beta here, again, is what will allow me to change the speed of mean reversion under the measure Q, okay? And what is nice about this is pricing forward is relatively straightforward. So I take the expectation under the risk-neutral measure is an additive model that I can jump up or down, or it diffuses. And I can have all of my, you know, I can have a delivery period, you know, from T1 to T2. So that's today's date. That's the start of delivery. That's the end of delivery. I can do it in closed form, which is kind of an advantage. After all, we can also calibrate it for an exponential model, but it's a kind of more complicated thing. If you really take into account delivery period in gas or electricity, then you have to do, you need to build a black box to do that. But here you can write it in closed form, and, you know, that's not the main point of the paper whatsoever, but it helps when we come to calibrating the parameters of the model. So, okay, so what am I going to do? I'm going to show you what we see under the physical measure when I use the Schwartz 97 model, the Schwartz and Smith. And when I do mine, you know, I'm not comparing model. You know, this is not about a racehorse. I'm not trying to compare whether my model is better than another model at all. All I'm trying to show is it might be truly that under the risk-neutral measure, you know, things are not only about shifting the distribution, but something has to happen to the variance of the model, for example, right? And that's what I'm trying to get at. So, first of all, I'm going to degeneralize the Lotsford price. I'm not going to say much about that. I can use a couple of, if I'm in the Gaussian setting, I can use MLE or the Kalman filter to extract the parameters under P. The arithmetic model, you know, I do, you know, in a similar way. I decentralize the spot series. I identify jumps up and down. Okay, I won't have time to really talk a lot about this, but it's kind of, I like the way we do it here. It's simple and straight to the point. We tried all sorts of things. You know, I still think there's room for improvement in terms of jump detection. And after we do this, right, I know which, you know, when I identify the jumps, I know the spot prices, what comes from here, what comes from the OU Brownian motion. You know, if I have time, I'll describe that a little bit more because it's not trivial, right? It's not that we spent a lot of time trying that to work. So I can calculate forwards with whatever model I write. And how do I do the calibration and the risk-neutral measure? Well, you know, this is important because I have, you know, long series for gas, for example, for the MBP. I say, well, I'm going to calibrate to month plus 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever. I stand today, calculate my theoretical prices. I have the market prices. Okay, I store that. And I do it for every day for however many years I have. And then I minimize square distances or use MATLAB's nonlinear least squares. And then I calibrate my parameters, okay? And that's how we get the parameters under the Q measure. And the models I'll be showing you will be the Schwartz. So whenever, you know, one-factor diffusion, two-factor diffusion, this is pretty much an OU. These two are exponential. This will be an OU plus arithmetic Brownian motion. And the arithmetic, whenever I talk about this one, I will always refer to some seasonal component, OU with Brownian motion, OU type compound Poisson exponential jumps up, the same exponential jumps down. Okay? All right, so yeah, I did write it before it was on the plane. So that's pretty much what I have. That's my OU process, jumps up, jumps down, and this pretty much was driving it. One assumption I'll make, which, you know, in another iteration of the paper will relax, is that the mean reversion for the jumps up and down is the same. We, in fact, have enough data to separate them, but you know, it takes a little bit long for the code to write. So I want to show you a couple of, I just have the tables here. This is the data. Here are the data we have. I'm going to mostly be showing gas from the MBP and UKPX, right? So I can show you two distinct ones in terms of gas and electricity. So natural gas, I have you know, a lot of data out there. I have monthly forwards up to 12-month delivery. UKPX, I have, you know, shorter period, to, you know, 7 years, you know, month plus one up to month plus 10. And whenever I show you something that's calibrated, it will be to all of that data I'd show you before, right? So let me talk you through some of the results. I just could not get the tables in my PowerPoint, or, well, my LaTeX. So, you know, so I'll just focus on a couple of ones because there's too many here, right? So this is only under the physical measure, right? So if I do the Schwartz model that you only have one factor that mean reverts, you know, these are pretty much, my mean reversion will be 11, my alpha, this is the volatility. If I apply the same model, which we know is a bad model, but I just want to show it there, this is what we get, right? So, you know, this is fine. You know, if I add the Schwartz and Smith, I add yet another factor, you know, the volatility of the long-term factor, which is an arithmetic shock, are given by this. So, you know, the correlation is insignificant. For all of these are significant to 1%, but the correlation between the long-term shock and short-term shock for the two-factor model was insignificant. So that doesn't really say much or anything new, right? If I take, you know, the original model that I showed you with the Schwartz and say, okay, if I calibrate that to market data, what do I get? Well, I get the market price of risk is 0.18, whatever you believe, the RMSE is 16.5, the moment I allow that under the risk neutral measure, you not only shift the process, but you also tone down the speed of mean reversion, you know, you get, you know, this is a new parameter. And the way to interpret it is that the new mean reversion rate will be the alpha minus beta, right? So that is a huge reduction. Right? Of course, this is a bad model. One factor model for this sort of stuff is not good. But what we're really saying here is that, you know, now if this thing was mean reverting at, let's say, 10, it's going to be mean reverting at 0.8, right? This is a huge reduction. The new mean reversion rate will be the one under the physical measure times this one here. So you would be multiplying this by 0.1, right? So it's a huge reduction. But again, it's not the best of the models. In the UK, PX, you can see it again, but again, that's electricity. If I showed you, if I did that with the long-term shocks, you can also, that gets reduced. Why? Because basically, under the Q measure, you're forcing something that is like OU to be more arithmetic. Otherwise, pricing a forward contract in this sort of model would be too, you know, wouldn't be good in the sense that anything that's far out there, 2-3 months, will be seasonal component plus no noise, because mean reversion will kill everything, right? You hit the stationary distribution of the OU process too quickly. So that's pretty much what this is capturing here, that, you know, you need some sort of something, some noise to be able to capture what happens in the forward contract. Let me go, I don't know how much time I have, but let me just go to the jump, ones, right, which is the interesting one. Interesting in the sense that I capture more things that I do observe in the data, right? So, 5 minutes? Yeah. Okay, so let's take the MBP again for the jump model. So that's the mean reversion of my OU. That is the volatility of the OU. That is, on average, all annualized variables. I observe 7 jumps up in the MBP. That's the gas, the national balancing point. Jumps down, that's the parameter of the exponential distribution of the jumps up and jumps down. Okay, so all of these are significant to 1%. Let me see the UK again, the UK PX electricity, right, which is really, you know, what, you know, surprisingly, you see lots of jumps up, you know, and gas also jumps. Most of the people, you know, if you look at the gas data, you know, you do see jumps all over the place. Well, it might not be as pronounced as what you see in electricity. Let's look at the amplitude of the jumps, but you still see them. So the interesting bit here would be, okay, what happens when I calibrate this stuff, right? So let me tell you what I'm showing you here. So the first shot I do with the jump component, with a jump model, is, okay, if I did not adjust the mean reversion rate, this is what I would get, right? I would get that the market price of the OU risk, or the diffusion risk, will be this. The market price of the jumps up will be this. And the market price of risk of jumps down will be that. If I look at a model where I allow this beta to be between 0 and 1, and, you know, we do it unconstrained, right? This one I forced, you know, to have no beta. Here, I allow the market price of all of these forward contracts to be calibrated to a model where, you know, beta can is in there. And that's the interesting bit. The OU, right, gets severely reduced. This is pretty much telling you that these OU shocks are mean reversing under the physical measure, but when you come to pricing forward contracts, they pretty much look like arithmetic Brownian motion. And then also the jumps, you know, seem to persist a lot again. So this is telling you again that, you know, you don't get to a pure sort of compound Poisson or diffusion jump process. But again, when a jump occurs under the risk-neutral measure, you see them as surviving for very, very long. Recall that is my old mean reversion of jumps, let's say, and then the new one will be the old times 0.2, right? A lot smaller. And that intuitively has to make sense, because when you start pricing, you know, contracts which are far out, it cannot be that mean reversion kills everything. Otherwise, you know, your forward, when you do your forward pricing, will be seasonal components plus or minus some sort of a linear shift that comes through these parameters. This is pretty much telling you there's a lot of noise still being captured in there. Then electricity, you know, I have exactly the same case. I have, you know, if I calibrated month 1 to 10, so if I didn't allow the speed of mean reversion to vary, if I didn't allow agents to really reflect that they want to overinsure against jump persistence, you know, this is what I would get, fair enough. But if I allow under the fiscal measure for agents to, you know, overstate or overinsure against how long the jump survived either up or down, you know, here I see exactly the same, right? There's a huge reduction, let's say that's around 0.7, so it would be the speed of mean reversion of the jumps would be the whatever I have under the fiscal measure times 0.3, right? So this is pretty much what they're telling us. And, you know, we're doing all sort of variations on colors, right? You know, we use contracts that expire between 1 and 4 months and 1 and 10 or 10 to 12, and all of those give you exactly what you expect to see, right? That the longer out you use, you know, if these are really far out, you know, you need the mean reversion to be slowed down, so agents are allowed in that model to price, you know, the noise and the persistence of noise further out, and the noise that comes from jumps and the noise that comes from from the diffusion. Well, I have too many things there to show, so nearly I'm on time, right? Right. So what can we conclude so far? This is ongoing work, and is. Well, first of all, is we do think that you know, the risk-neutral measure has to be, you know, studied a little bit more in terms to have a model that works on them both. You know, you can divorce them and say, listen, I don't care about the spot model, I don't care about the fiscal measure, but you know, I like to have the connection between what goes on in the fiscal under the fiscal measure and the spot market or day-ahead market and the forward contract, and I do think that the connection has to be through, you know, stretching, you know, allowing the variance to be higher or the process not to mean revert as quickly as we see it. It looks as if, you know, what seems to be a mean reverting process under P becomes an arithmetic Brownian motion under Q. So what we think on average is that agents are overpricing unwanted events like deviations from where you should be, right? Both the retailer or the producer would want to exaggerate how long can you stay away from the seasonal component, and the way to do that is to overprice it by paying for forward contracts, you know, over the odds, right? You know, although you know it's going to persist a jump for only 5 days, you might be willing to pay a price that says, well, those jumps will persist for, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 days, okay? And we can, you know, another section of the paper I don't have time to talk about is to link this directly to the stochastic risk premium, which the initial stuff on the OU process, René has a paper with Michael Kofsky where they show that the market price of risk has to be a mean reverting process, and that is exactly what I would get. My change of measure for the Brownian motion, I would get exactly that. For the jump, something along the lines too, right? So an equivalent way of saying the first part of the talk where I have that the mean reversion of the OU process gets slowed down is by having a market price of risk which is mean reverting itself, okay? The from the mathematical point of view, the contribution of this paper is that I can also do it for the jumps, but I do it in the arithmetic model, because otherwise it would be too difficult to do it with the exponential, because I get this state-dependent arrival of jumps, this jump clustering, which I think is also important to have under the Q measure, and I would like to have it under the fiscal measure, but then the pricing of forwards would be too complicated if I do it in an exponential model. And I'm going to stop to keep the time.